Welcome to another edition of the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane, managing editor of the Texans Wire. You can catch my work on Twitter at The Real Mark Lane. You can catch the content from the Texans Wire on Twitter at The Texans Wire. And joining me, as always, is John Crumpler, one of the great writers we have at Texans Wire. You've been doing great work this offseason. I especially like the draft and identity series that you released last week. I thought that was very in-depth, very insightful, and kind of like laid out paths like an RPG game of choose your own adventure.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to do. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm John Crumpler. You can find my work, my tweets at John H. Crumpler. But yeah, I love the draft and identity series because I do think it would be a viable way to turn the team around pretty quickly in one facet of their game if they wanted to. But the more I've sat on it for a week, Mark, we might be a little too rod into draft and identity. Might be something we look to do in 2023 more than 2022.
Yeah, this could be just the BPA draft.
I mean, that's what it probably should be. Look, the thing is, if you spend four picks on one side of the ball, we're going to be so bad somewhere else that it cancels out, you know? What good is it if we can run the ball if our defense is going to let up, you know, the 32nd most rushing yards again and the 30th most passing yards?
How many of those rushing yards, though, were because teams were just milking the clock because they'd already had a lead?
I mean, probably a lot, but then my counter argument would be, how much worse would we have been against the pass if teams had kept trying to score touchdowns on us?
It would have been even worse. Yeah. I mean, it'd have been horrendous.
The secondary definitely needs help, but it does look like help is on the way.
Yeah, definitely. They're going to bring help. We'll get to that kind of in topic number two, with Roger McCreary and Kerr Elam and just what's going on with cornerback. But really what I want to talk about now is you and Jordan Punn are collaborating and trying to explain the Tampa 2 defense. And I think that this is really beneficial to Texans fans because you've got two of the best football, you know, scouting and tape minds that cover the Texans trying to explain it for the fans. Just tell us a little bit about what you and Jordan are cooking up.
Thank you, Mark. So Jordan's one of my good friends that writes about the Texans. I got to meet him at the Senior Bowl and spent a lot of time with him there. And our thought process is that right now you hear the term scheme fit thrown around a lot, whether it's, oh, this corner isn't big enough, or this linebacker can't cover well, or when people talk about Jalen Petrie, they'll say he's a tweener. And you know, a lot of people who know what they're talking about will say that, and a lot of people who don't know what they're talking about will say that. So it's hard to separate out the truth from the noise. And our goal is kind of to make the fan base smarter with this series of, you guys will be able to watch it on YouTube or read the articles on the Texans Wire and just explain, okay, here are the 11 defenders on the field and here's each of their responsibilities in the scheme. And the idea is that we all walk away with a better idea of, one, what Lovie Smith wants to do in Houston, and two, the kind of players that Nick Caserio is going to be targeting on draft night.
Yeah, and that really will bring a lot of clarity to how Texans fans can watch the draft, because then if Houston does something that Mel Kiper didn't mock and Todd McShay didn't mock, then at least they can make sense of the rationale that the organization, that your assistant directors of player personnel, James Lipford and Matt Bezirgan, had when they told Caserio, all right, this is the guy at this slot.
Yeah, and a great example of that would be Jordan Davis is a defensive tackle from the Georgia Bulldogs. He was a huge part of the national championship defense, and historically one of the best college defenses of all time. And nationally, the narrative on Davis is that he's going to be limited. Some think he's a two-down player and that he doesn't have the stamina nor the pass rushing technique to be a top 16 pick in the first round. But when you look at the Texans and their Tampa 2, we really need a nose tackle that can consistently eat both the center and block from the guard, so two bodies, and create pressure in that way. And there's no one who's going to do that better in this draft from Jordan Davis. So suddenly, like you said, a pick where Mel Kiper doesn't think that guy should be selected this high, hopefully it'll make a little more sense of, oh, Lovie Smith needs this piece if he wants to be successful in his first year as head coach.
So you're talking about like a one technique, right, for Jordan Davis?
Yes. Yeah, a nose.
Okay, yeah. Which is really kind of like did they have, yeah, kind of the Booger McFarland role that they had alongside Warren Sapp down in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, it's the role that Roy Lopez really occupied. Not what Malik Collins is, more of the three technique, that pass rusher defensive tackle. This is Jordan Davis fits into that one technique. Exactly.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. If you did get Jordan Davis, what do you do with Roy Lopez?
I think you just have a really fearsome defensive tackle rotation. Like I wrote in a draft and identity stop the run, I said that one of the best parts about having Roy Lopez and that he has exceeded expectation is suddenly if Jordan Davis does have some issues with stamina at the beginning of the season, as he works his way up to an NFL game load and the speed of the game, when Jordan Davis comes out, Roy Lopez comes in and he is more than capable. And what it means is you always have a fresh defensive tackle attacking the interior. And I don't think the importance of that could be understated when you're trying to stop running games that feature Derrick Henry and Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, and isn't it funny how what the rest of the division, you know, like who they are kind of defines what you're trying to be, you know, mm-hmm. because you got, like you said, Taylor and Henry in the AFC South. So then the Texans need a defense that shuts those guys down. And then that's how they're built.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite parts about football, because in the basketball, I don't even think I could name everyone in the Rockets division. And then in baseball, you care about your division, but you're not going to build to beat them. Football has this built-in nuance of, hey, if you can make sure you can beat these three teams, you have a really good shot at making the playoffs. And once you're in the dance, anything can happen. So, yeah, it is funny that we are coincidentally in a division with, could I say, two of the top three running backs in the league?
Yes.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor's easily number one in my book, and Henry, even with the injury, is no further than three. So, yeah, if you can build a defense that can stop the Titans and the Colts' ability to run the ball and put some pressure on Matt Ryan, which is going to be a little difficult, and Ryan Tannehill, then that's a totally different ballgame.
So where can we expect to find what you – I mean, we've got Texans Wire. It's going to be there, right? Where else can folks find the collaboration between you and Jordan?
I will be tweeting out the YouTube videos. It's going to come out in three parts. So I imagine Thursday, Friday, and maybe we'll wait till Monday for the last one. I'll put them out on my YouTube channel. I'll be honest, just made it today, so not sure what the name is. I'll have to go look. But it'll also be like hyperlinked in the article.
217X5, right?
Yes, just first name, bunch of numbers, at football.com.
I'm sorry, I goofed that up. What is it?
Oh, no, I joked. I said first name, bunch of numbers is going to be my username on YouTube.
Okay, but we'll definitely have it. And if you follow John on his Twitter, then it'll definitely populate there, and we'll promote it. We'll have an article on Texans Wire as well.
Yes, you guys will find it. It's going to be pretty good. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, and I think that this is something that's definitely needed for Houston fans, because they've been accustomed to the 3-4 defense since 2011 when Wade Phillips came in, and so that's kind of what they're used to. this gives them something to look for and something to expect, something to get ready for with the draft.
Yeah, agreed. And I think this flows beautifully into our next topic, because really the debate between these two corners comes down to scheme fit.
Yeah. And I saw that Texans fans were were a little kind of anxious as Elam was brought in for a visit to the Texans when Roger McCreary is a thing. I mean, what's up with that?
I'm not going to say I'm anxious, Mark. Am I disappointed? Yes.
But let me throw in a little bit of rationale. Let me ask you this, actually. Between those two guys, do you think they're both going to go at 2 in round 2, number 37 overall?
I think Elam might not even make it to the second round. He's got that prototypical corner size and speed that teams are really looking for. And if you look at it, his college production is not Roger McCreary's production. Roger McCreary was a better college player. But the draft is not an exercise in finding the best college players. If it was, teams would not have busts. It's about projecting guys to the next level. And Elam has the skill set that teams like better. But if we transition to McCreary, I would think McCreary is a lock for a round 2 pick, probably somewhere between, I mean, in the top 50, top 60.
Here's my rationale for why Elam was brought in for a visit is because you've got, even if you like Roger McCreary and he's your guy and you want to take him in round 2, I mean, we've seen craziness happen in the draft. And just to use an example from, you know, the team that's at the other end of I-45, that in 2020 they didn't even have a projection, like an internal projection of CeeDee Lamb going where he did. They thought he'd be gone. And they were in, you know, place and they got him. So really, I think this may be more of a contingency, just so you're not left with, you know, just surprised and flabbergasted when McCreary, who you've targeted, is gone at 37. So you do have a plan in place. So you've evaluated the class and you've got enough material on McCreary and everything from the combine and everything that you know what you're going to get. So you just want to see what's up with Elam.
So yeah, I mean, that's very optimistic. I've not seen them do any homework on Roger McCreary. I'm not sure who was at the Auburn Pro Day or if we sent anybody. They have not had him in for a visit, but I don't imagine that they will. I think with Elam, they're doing their homework on a guy who really does fit. They want these zone corners, these able-bodied zone corners who can tackle. And Elam at 6'2", he really fits that. And I think it would be kind of a dream scenario if he fell to 37. I do think that it's a real possibility they take a corner at 3. Everyone knows they had Sauce Gardner into the building this week. And Aaron Wilson just mocked him at 3rd overall. And that is a well-sourced man with the Houston Texans. But Elam fits what they want to do, and it doesn't surprise me. While Roger McCreary, as much as I love him, I think he's a leader. He's a great player. He's a funny guy to cover. I mean, he eats a bowl of baked beans and sugar before every game, and all he did was dominate the SEC. But at the end of the day, 5'10 with shorter arms, it doesn't matter that he was first team all SEC. I'm not sure that his man coverage skill set fits what Lovie Smith wants to do.
Yeah, and I've seen cornerbacks of that particular, with those particular vitals, struggle to find playing time with teams that run Tampa 2 or just basically that particular scheme. They really just struggle, even if they are a good football player, to get playing time just because of the commitment to the philosophy.
Yeah, he would have a hard time, and his skill set just isn't a perfect fit. He's really a jam man corner, and the cover two asks you to play a lot of zone. His size, like you commented, they wouldn't really want to put him out on the field. He could be a great nickel, but we're supposed to have one of the best nickels in the NFL right now in Desmond King.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, Desmond King, they played outside some last year. So they definitely want someone that can play on the outside that's, you know, that rangy Richard Sherman type of body style. Clicker, clicker.
Sorry. No, I, my dream of Roger McCreary being a Texan, it feels very unlikely at this point.
Oh, so too bad the dream has to die. Let me ask you this. Who's one of your biggest pet cats that you wanted to come to Houston that didn't?
Ooh, Teddy Bridgewater is probably my number one.
You wanted Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, really bad in 2014. I loved him. I mean, mind you, I was in 10th grade and had just started watching football like maybe a year and a half prior. So I didn't have a lot of experience, but I thought Bridgewater was QB1 that year. I thought he could be the face of the franchise. I mean, I wanted him as high as number one overall. And then by the time you get to 28th and he's still on the board, I was kind of convinced Houston was going to trade up and take him or maybe even get him the next day at 33rd. And instead, we all know what happened. Minnesota Vikings leapfrogged us. They took him at 32, and we took Xavier Sufilo at 33, never to be heard of again. What about you, Mark?
A pet cat for the Texans. I don't know that I don't want to say this necessarily because it's not exactly true, but Jonathan Taylor, because it's what they needed. It's what they could, it was right in their range, you know, and they didn't manage to pull it off. But like I said,
that's such a crazy what if.
Yeah, really.
We took Blacklock the pick before.
Yeah, this is why I say that is because for me, I took over Texans Wire in June of 2018. So my first real Texans draft was 2019. And I don't really recall having, a pet cat for Houston in that particular draft because with Titus Howard, I thought, okay, you know, that's kind of where they needed to go. Although Andre Dillard, they could have afforded to take him. Yeah, so that's why I said Jonathan Taylor, just because.
Yeah, I forgot about Dillard. The fan base was kind of up in arms that we let Philadelphia get him, and that honestly worked out pretty well. I like Titus. I think he's in for a really big year.
Yeah, and Dillard has just not really panned out. So,
no, not at all.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is between Elam and McCreary, I think that they're doing their due diligence. Oh, I try to stay away from the pat football phrases like that, like due diligence, but I just did it.
Now, here's a good way.
I think they're just doing their due diligence and taking a look at what the cornerback group looks like so that they don't get caught with their pants down when they go to address the need.
Yeah. They do have to walk away if a corner in. I'm sorry, I was kind of absent-minded when you were talking about the corners on the team, but we're really in a tough spot with Desmond King having to play outside right now, and Lonnie Johnson's never taken the strides that you would have wanted. So if they don't walk away from the draft of a corner who can at least slot to the second, I mean, ideally you want a number one corner out of the draft.
I think they're going to get that guy with Sauce Gardner. Because he's really, because of how much time they've spent with him. Because when Lovie Smith goes to your pro day and talks to you, I mean, that's just, that's not for nothing. I mean, it's not because Lovie Smith really loves Skyline Chili. Okay. It's because they have an intention to come away from the draft with a cornerback that reflects their identity.
Yeah. And he could do, I mean, he's a great player. I need to watch more of him. Haven't really made a decision on my number one corner in the class. I've been under the assumption they would take an edge rusher or Kyle Hamilton at three. So it probably is time for me to start looking closely at Stingley or Sauce. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's the pick.
I'd rather have Gardner than Stingley. If they go Stingley at three, I'd just be too disappointing.
They're not going Stingley, Mark. Did you see they didn't send anyone to the Pro Bowl today? They sent like two scouts.
Yeah. So
or the Pro Day today.
Right. No, I know what you meant when you said but yeah, this is Lovie Smith at the Combine, March 2nd. He said, we put a big emphasis on ball skills. To me, the object of the defense is every snap to score and take the ball away. Put a big emphasis on that. But we won't try to bring anyone in, add them to our mix, if they don't like to tackle. We ask our corners to tackle. They have ball skills, of course, but it still comes down to whether you can play man coverage a lot. That's a hard guy to find that I'm talking about.
Yeah, they need a corner real bad. I'm excited. I cannot wait to see who they take in this draft.
Yeah, and that's what's fun, is that Houston is finally a viable participant, as opposed to having to wait until round three. Okay, mm-hmm. So you're having to wait midway through day two just to be a part of the draft. So those days are behind Houston. And, now you see. Now it's all fun, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And an interesting conversation that's been happening this week. You know, Mark, if we had some more picks, we could kind of take our time with the corner selection. Maybe you would think about a guy like Roger McCreary more seriously if you could take him at 58 instead of at 37. A lot of speculation about trading Brandon Cooks. How would you feel about the subject? And what would someone need to offer to you to get Brandon Cooks off the Texans?
I think the reports of a second round pick, that's what I would need, is because Cooks is my leader in the locker room. Cooks is my 1,000-yard receiver. Cooks is probably the best perimeter player on my roster right now. So that's what I would need, is a second-round pick. Is that what he should go for? Is that what teams are willing to offer? Probably not, but that's my cap if you want me to part with Brandon Cooks. Some of the talk, some of the talk about Brandon Cooks leaving is malarkey. How's that?
Yeah, I would agree. It feels like the NFL, which is crazy. We've had a bunch of good storylines this offseason, but the machine's got to continue, and that NFL content machine needs more storylines. And a pretty easy one to talk about is, hey, there's a perennial Pro Bowl receiver on a rebuilding team. Would they trade him? I agree with you. I don't think they're looking to get rid of Brandon Cooks. He's stated how much he likes playing in Houston. He clearly is a character fit in the locker room. And he's one of the few character fits right now that's actually a very good football player. I don't think you can undersell his value to the development of Davis Mills. Some people are talking about, oh, it would be good for Davis to have to spread the ball out instead of targeting Cooks, like they said with Deshaun Watson, and that's BS. You need a young quarterback, especially with the offensive line's not going to be an elite unit, no matter what we do in the draft. You want him to have someone he's comfortable with and that can consistently win. And Cooks is that guy. I'm probably with you that if someone wanted to take Brandon Cooks off the Texans, it starts with a second round pick. And I need another selection after that because I need multiple opportunities to find a player the caliber that I'm losing. And if they're not getting that kind of offer, I'm starting to talk an extension with Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, right. Or just let him play out his contract. If Cooks were to be traded, I think it's kind of the inverse of the DeAndre Hopkins situation. If you'll remember, was it at the trade deadline or in the wake of the trade deadline? But there were reports that came out that Houston was trying to shop him in 2019 during the trade deadline. And then he gets traded. First opportunity, new league year, free agency of 2020. I think Cooks would be the opposite of that. I think if you get to the trade deadline, then and a team just had their number one receiver go down, kind of like a Will Fuller situation in 2018 when he went down, then they traded for the late Demaryius Thomas. I think if you could see a situation like that where Cooks is on the move, but I don't think as you're forming your roster in the spring, you part with Brandon Cooks. Unless it's for just huge value that you can get to replace him. Because that's like I said, he is the best perimeter player on the team right now. He's the best skill position player on the team. And it takes, you go backwards if he goes.
Yeah, I agree with you on all those points. And something I'll add to that is, despite that, what the team cannot do is you cannot let him play out this season without an extension. Because if he walks, the Texans have over $100 million in cap space next year. So they're virtually guaranteed to make a signing that would eliminate any compensatory picks. And beyond losing a good football player, what this team is absolutely not in a position to do is to lose a good football player for nothing. So I really hope that Nick Caserio has a plan, whether it's that they're already talking about a contract extension, whether they're waiting until after the draft, or like you said, maybe someone gets really desperate, like the Demaryius Thomas trade, and you can extract maximum value for Cooks in the fall.
Yeah. And speaking of value, the Houston Texans are in a situation at number 3 overall, number 13 overall, where if you could move down a little bit, you can still get your guy and also build capital for either the rest of the draft or into next year. And the best way to do it is to fleece some quarterback needy team. Do you think that the Texans can fleece anyone looking for a quarterback? Because this week, the Philadelphia Eagles and the New Orleans Saints, they made a series of trades. And so now Philadelphia, they pick at 15 and 18 in round one. And the Saints, they pick at 16 and 19. So if nothing else, the Saints at least have capital now to move up and leapfrog the Panthers and go get Malik Willis if they want. But do you think that Houston, you think that they can fleece anyone looking for a quarterback?
I'll never say never, because you just don't know in the draft. These quarterbacks are always overvalued relative to their actual talent, and that's just a product of how valuable the position is on the field. But Houston's in a weird spot. Would you consider getting the 16th, the 19th, and a second-round pick fleecing somebody for the third overall selection?
You said 16,
19, and 43, the Saints second.
Oh yeah, I that type of pick. But you better have done your homework on the top 100 guys. You know what I mean? Because yeah. now all of your capital is in this draft. At least the Eagles, they picked up another first-round pick for 2023, so they can play this game again, you know? So really kind of your capital is all within this draft, and you better go BPA and build it here. But you miss out on really taking Hamilton and Ahmad Gardner, and I don't know that I would do that honestly.
And that's why I say I don't know if they could fleece anybody, because when I think fleece, I think of Miami got excellent value in that trade back with the Niners. They moved back 9 spots and they got 2 future first round picks. And I don't think anyone is giving Houston that deal for the 3rd overall pick this year. I think maybe you could pick up an additional first. I don't think Atlanta's in a position to trade future ones, even if they want a quarterback. I don't think Carolina has any capital this year beyond future ones to give. And if they like Kenny Pickett, I don't think anyone's stopping them from taking Kenny Pickett at 6. So could it happen? Maybe. But would they fleece anyone in the process? I don't think so. If I had to bet, I think they're going to make the pick just because they're in an awkward spot. If 3rd overall, why trade to 3 when you can trade to 4? Why trade to 3 when you could trade to 5 with the Giants?
And by the way, folks, the official sportsbook partner of USA Today Sports is Tipico Sportsbook. So if you ever want to make any wagers, we recommend Tipico Sportsbooks.
Did I tell you about the wager I made on the draft?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty upset right now. I'm not feeling confident about it.
What is it? Now, what was the wager? What is it?
So about a month and a half ago, my friend was in, I think he was in Denver. He was in some, I'm not in a legal betting state, but I told him to put down money on Kyle Hamilton going, I think his draft position was 6.5. And at the time, I was like, Hamilton could go 2 to Detroit. He could go 3 to us. He could go 4 to the Jets, 5 to the Giants. I was like, that's free money. And now I don't feel good whatsoever that he goes in the first 6 picks.
I think he does. I hope he goes to either the Houston, not Houston. I think the Lions do that. And I think the Giants do that. But it just depends because, like, I think the Giants could be in play for Hamilton, but do they do it at 5 or do they do it at 7? Because you know Carolina's just going to go with Malik Willis. So do they do it at 5 or 7?
And, you know, if you don't take your offensive tackle, that is a position that Carolina would seriously entertain. So if I'm the Giants, I'm taking Evan Neal and expecting Hamilton to be there at 7. I wouldn't take Hamilton and expect Neal to be there at 7.
Oh, yeah, so you probably are going to get messed
up. We'll see. Maybe the Texans save me. Maybe they bring in Hamilton soon for a visit.
Yeah, I would try to do that. Even though Gardner has the interest, even though Gardner is a really good cornerback, I would still go with Hamilton because it fills multiple opportunities on your defense that you've elucidated on the Texans wire. So this week we did at the NFL wire sites, all 32 editors, we did a mock draft, a live mock draft on our official communications channel that's on my phone. I would get notifications of, all right, pick 1 and then pick 2 and then my phone buzzed, and then, all right, Texans are on the clock. I'm like, what? Because, you know, I didn't know what was going on. And so I used some of your work, John, and I decided I'm just going to have fun with this. I'm not going to be serious about it and make it an actual draft. I'm just going to go ahead and, you know, pick. And I went with the build around Davis Mills route. I took Ikem Ekwonu, and then at 13, I almost took Zion Johnson, which is actually the ground and pound identity, but Drake London was available, so I took him because Garrett Wilson went to the Atlanta Falcons at number 8. But here's why I bring that up is in that particular draft, it was Willis at 6 and then Kenny Pickett at 20 to the Steelers. So, I mean, you had the quarterback needy teams of the Falcons, the Washington, the Saints twice, and they all said, nah, we're just going to pass on Kenny Pickett and just bolster the roster. So I thought that was an interesting choice, collaboration, and an interesting set of decisions by my colleagues who really cover these teams. So
can I make a comment on that?
Yeah.
I think Kenny Pickett's just really hard for fans and for writers to evaluate because he has a limited ceiling. He's a 5-year starter. He's going to be one of the oldest rookie quarterbacks in his class. And it took him until his 5th year to really figure it out at Pittsburgh. And he's one of those players that if you're covering the team, you don't want to take him because you're like, oh, we're going to end up like in a Mac Jones, Kirk Cousins situation. He's not a sexy pick. He doesn't have a high ceiling. All he's going to do is win you more games. And you want to win Super Bowls if you're a fan, if you're a writer. And that's in direct contrast, I would say, to how NFL teams are going to operate around Kenny Pickett, which is we can bring in this kid. He ran a pro style or close to it, like offense at Pittsburgh. He can make every throw. He's mature, and he can win us games and save our jobs. They're not thinking like writers. They're thinking about the wins matter. It's not just the Super Bowl top 5 quarterback potential. So Pickett's one of those funny guys where all the national people have him so much higher than people who cover the own teams. Because like if I was a fan of the Panthers, I wouldn't want to take Kenny Pickett. But if I'm Carolina, hey, I'm paying DJ Moore $21 million and we're ready to win now if we have a competent quarterback. And Kenny Pickett's the guy who can do that. So it's a very interesting conundrum seeing his evaluation in the league versus his evaluation from the draft industrial complex and writers like us who cover it.
So do you think Pickett would work in Arthur Smith's offense in Atlanta?
I do not think they would take Kenny Pickett, no. I think that Arthur Smith would want a more mobile quarterback, ideally. We saw him do his best work with Ryan Tannehill, who's really underrated from a mobility standpoint. Atlanta's also, they're going to be a miserable football team. Barring some really amazing things happening in the season, I would say they're a lock for a top 5 pick. I would say they're the worst roster. And well, maybe Houston. Houston's pretty bad too, but their division's probably going to beat up on them. Atlanta's bad, and Atlanta should just bank on taking a CJ Stroud or a Bryce Young. And you know they're not like Philadelphia, who's lying to themselves. They could have a chance at those two guys. Atlanta should expect a shot at a top 3 pick. So I wouldn't expect them to take Kenny Pickett. No.
Okay, then Washington.
Washington, I could see it. The problem is that you just paid a lot for Carson Wentz, and I'm not sure how much – I think Kenny Pickett's a lot steadier, but I'm not sure how much higher his ceiling is from Carson Wentz from a physical profile. I actually think Carson's probably a better athlete than Kenny Pickett. So it's interesting. Kenny Pickett is the guy in the class. He's kind of like Mac Jones in that if anyone is ready to be an immediate starter in this year's class – Kenny Pickett's your guy. You can make an argument for Desmond Ridder too because of the style of offense they ran at Cincinnati. But Washington, I would have a difficult time knowing that you're admitting what you paid for Wentz is already a failure if you take Pickett.
I've seen Desmond Ridder mocked to Washington, which I thought was funny.
Ridder is firmly my QB4, and it's not super. I like Matt Corral more than the general public, though. So very high on
that. That is true. That is true. Yeah. When you were talking, going through our archive of Toro pictures to see if I could use one of them on our new banner at Texans Wire.
Are we getting a Toro banner?
I may just do it. I mean, for you
Mark,
know, rest of the month, at least until, you know, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Part of the problem is with this roster that you just mentioned is I don't know, like, who to build the team around in terms of publicity. Because it was easy back in 2019. It's just, because after the 18 season, there were photos of J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson hugging and smiling and everything. So you could take that, boom, Texans Wire. Then when DeAndre Hopkins gets traded, doesn't really affect it too much. I can leave that banner for a couple. Then going into the 21 season, it's like, the Brandon Cooks and Randall Cobb. Then Randall Cobb gets traded. It's like, ugh, now I got to find something else. So,
Mark, we should just go full meme, embrace what the high school young 20 demographic and how they're talking about this team. Should be Toro in the middle. Can have Lovie Smith or like Jonathan Grenard and then Davis Mills. Put the three of them or pick two. You know, people love Lovie's beard. I think Toro is a must because it's freaking hilarious. It's a callback to that Fox graphic when we were eliminated. I still can't believe they put Toro's face there. They didn't put the head coach. They didn't put Davis Mills, Tyron Taylor. No, they put Toro. I think Toro deserves to be the flagship banner for our site for at least a month.
I mean, at the risk of making it look like a joke, okay, like it's a Houston Texans parody site, I think, because I've got this great, I've got a picture from the Panthers game of Toro outstretching his arms, and so you take that, and then you take the Lovie Smith photo from the Packers preseason game, and there you go. I mean, that's
yes.
Just put the Texans Wire logo, and there you go. That's the new banner.
Get like a lightning bolt back there, or
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
I don't think that looks like a meme.
But here's the thing, though. Seriously, isn't Toro like the world champion mascot? So it's not like he's just a mascot. Like, he's the reigning champion of mascots or something right now.
He is the mascot. And you know what? He's done more than some of these players on the team right now. We have the blue check mark. People wouldn't think it's a parody thing.
I think people would like it a lot.
I may just do it, and then, you know, I'm serious. I mean, and why not? Let's just, I mean, aren't we allowed to have a little fun? I mean, you know, I think that honestly, you should have 3 to 4 banners a year, really, to just kind of reflect the mood of the team throughout the calendar year, you know?
Dude, you could also do Nick Caserio on the cell phone. You know the picture I'm talking about? The one where he's smiling, he has the phone up to his ear? That could be good.
Which one's that? Send that to me. I'm not quite familiar with it. But I do have a Nick Caserio one where he's holding his coffee in a I call him a go mug, but he's holding it in one of those, and he's at OTAs just smiling. That'd be another good one. Just throw the Texans Wire logo, because that's also a thing. I don't know. Let me try to think. I don't know that I have ever seen a team where the general manager is the face of the team.
Now, this is his team.
You've had, for example, Bill Polian, but you had Tony Dungy. You've had strong general managers, but equally strong coaches. I don't know that I've ever seen just like it was, at least in 21. It's probably going to change a little now that Lovie Smith's here. But I don't know that I've ever seen just like the general manager as the face of the team. That's just a little strange.
I mean, and he is the face, undoubtedly. Anything that happens to the Texans moving forward, these are Nick Caserio's Texans. He clearly has blind faith from Kyle McNair and the McNair family to run this as he sees fit. I think it'd be very appropriate for this era of Texans football to have Toro and Nick Caserio, because that's literally what it is. It's we are the Texans. This is Nick Caserio's team. He's going to get some players who can win games in here eventually.
So, not Lovie Smith, but Toro and Nick Caserio.
Now, when we say it out loud, I think Toro and Nick Caserio would be extremely popular. That'd be a home run. I'm going to start tweeting at you every day.
All right. Well, we're process oriented, not results oriented on that. So, you know, we'll try to make it happen.
All right. All right. All right.
It's just when I submit that request to have Toro in there, like I said, my graphics guy is going to think it's a joke or something. But hey, no, seriously, he is the world champion mascot. So this isn't like he's just, you know, run of the mill or something. I mean, Toro is number one at what he does.
He is. He's the best mascot in the league, and that's all we've got right now. So you can't tell me otherwise.
Yeah. So it's really about celebrating the positives, you know? So,
speaking of celebration.
Yeah. So Whitney Mercilus, he calls it a career, and 10 seasons in the NFL. He was the Texans 2012 first round pick out of Illinois. What do you think? In terms of, like, the player, I think he's doing a good thing. I think he's walking out on his own terms with his health. He still has his health, so to speak. I think that for the player, it's good that he retired. In terms of just the Texans and everything and what he meant, you know, it's always sad when a guy doesn't get a Super Bowl, even if he goes to Green Bay to do so. I think that as a player, it was a really smart move because he still got his health. And when you look at Earl Campbell in the wheelchair, that's just a hard image to take. It really is.
Yeah. I'm excited that he's retiring. It was time. I think we'd seen his play had gradually declined. What a great career. I mean, I really started watching football in the Tim Tebow Broncos season was my first NFL year. And I think that was either the year before or the year that Mercilus joined the team. The year before, so 2011, and he was the next draft. I mean, he was a face of the Texans franchise for as long as I've really known the team. Finished his career 58 sacks. I thought it was interesting reading he never made a Pro Bowl mark, which when I say that out loud feels really bizarre.
Yeah, because you would figure that at least during the Gary Kubiak years, that he's really only two of them that he was there for, but you would figure he might get one there. You'd figure that in 2015, when it was basically the Texans only had one unit and it was the defense, when he had 12 sacks, he'd get one there. He was voted second team all pro in 2016, but yeah, he never even got to go to the Pro Bowl because someone backed out type of thing.
A little odd, but a Texans legend. He was great here. He was part of some amazing defenses, and Mark, hell of a name, Merciless for a defender. I mean, I don't think it can get any better for an edge rusher.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the coolest names because it's just that's what you want to be as a defender. Coming off the edge, getting to the quarterback is merciless.
Yeah, we'll miss him. And he was part of a great era of Texans football. I mean, he's a great man, too. I'll be excited to see what he does next.
Yeah, he has his With Mercy Foundation, and he does a lot of cook-offs and taste of the this and that with it and raises money that way. So I think he's going to continue to do that and continue to be a staple in terms of Houston philanthropy. But, and probably, you know, the team, they'll make him a main ambassador. So when they give an artificial turf field to a high school or something like that, he'll be there for the photo ops and stuff. So, well, that Merciless will definitely be around. And by the way, for diehard Texans Talk podcast fans, you know that Merciless was on an episode of the Texans Talk podcast in the 2019 season. So there you go.
We're going to get some players on here.
So yeah, I believe in that.
All right, Mark. Where can they find you on Twitter?
See, he's trying to close out the show because John only knows how to close up shop in surgeries. So he wasn't really – so what he just did was kind of like if I tried to close up shop in a surgery, I'd just be like, I mean, give me the, you know, the stapler. Let's just – all right, let's go, you know?
Mark, come on. It wasn't that bad. I mean, I paused, but I pause a lot.
Yeah. But,
I mean, it wasn't graceful. Definitely wasn't my best closing, but
– I got a question for real. How often do you guys change, like, the gloves and the mask and the aprons and that stuff when you're doing a surgery? Is it based on splatter count, or is it based on, like, well, we've gone an hour wearing this particular PPE, let's go ahead and get this? Like, what determines how often you change that stuff?
Like, in the middle of a procedure?
Yes.
There would be very few indications to change. I mean, so you said blood splatter, but like your own blood is sanitary for you. Like that's sterile to your body. So that's not an indication to change gloves. And then you also mentioned we've been wearing it for too long. No, that the only indication to really change gloves or PPE would be if something really, I don't know how into detail I want to go here, but for instance, I was in vaginal surgery. So if you're cleaning the skin in the area down there, you would need to change gloves because that is not considered a sterile area. So you change gloves after that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So it depends on how sterile the environment, like the area. Okay. That's interesting. So for the patient internally, their blood is considered sterile to them. That's interesting.
Yeah, so I can get as much blood on my hands as it's supposed to be, but where that blood came from, your body, like that's part of you. So that's not a biohazard to anyone, to the body that we're opening on. At least from my understanding. Don't quote me on this.
No, I'm not quoting it. This is just
imagine working in an abdominal cavity and you have to change gloves every time you get too much, you get blood on them. You know, you'd be changing gloves every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, what I've found is that if I wear the gloves for longer than about 20 minutes, they just really get sweaty inside. And just, you know, on that basis, I would probably have the compulsion to want to change them in the middle of the procedure.
It's so cold that you don't really notice how many layers. Like I won't say they're freezing, but like they're pretty like well air conditioned, well ventilated spaces. So you don't really notice how many layers you have on unless you're just too close to the operating lights.
That's right. Like Bill O'Brien talked about, layers of productive players, dependable, smart, you know, whatever. Yeah. Those days are in the past. The Lovie Smith days are before us, and there's 3 weeks to go until the NFL draft. And folks, you want to keep listening to the Texans Talk podcast because one of these days we're going to do a live mock draft where John and I go back and forth with the picks for the first 32 picks in the first round, and it'll be a lot of fun. You'll definitely want to check that out. And if you want to tell John who he needs to take for your team, let's say somehow you're a Saints fan and you're listening to the Texan Sock podcast, then you need to tweet at John on Twitter and tell him who the Saints need to take in this particular mock draft we're going to do. And if I were a Saints fan and wanted to get a hold of John Crumpler, how would I do it?
See, that's a much better transition. You are better at this than me. You guys can follow me again at John H. Crumpler. Plenty of great draft content left to come this season. Mark, where can they follow you?
At The Real Mark Lane on Twitter. Also at The Texans Wire on Twitter to get our great content. And I'm going to get out of here and then react to the Aaron Wilson mock draft, because there's a mock draft. No, I don't mean to name names, but there's a mock draft where Roy Orbison releases one. There's a mock draft where Aaron Wilson releases it and says, the Texans do this. Then it's like, oh my gosh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That changes everything. So yeah. I'm going to try to get that up tonight, or Wednesday night tonight on the Texans Wire. But anyway, that's what's going on here.
Yeah, it's going to be good. More to come, everybody. Have a great morning.